Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Whakatakata hau ki te uru, whakatakata hau ki te tonga. Kia mā kina kina ke uta, kia mā taratara ki tai. E hi aki ana te atakura, he tio, he huka, he hauhu, tihei, mauri ora. Hoki mai ki Kahurangi, ko au te kōrero hau e tēnei reo Irirangi. He uri au no Ngāti Kahananu ki Wairarapa, rātou ko Rangitāne o Wairarapa mō Upoko, ko Papawai te marae, ko Ngāti Kahukura Āwhitia, rātou ko Ngāti Moe, Ngāti Murutu na hapu, kei Waiohini Gorge tuku kāinga, ko Rawiri, rātou ko Waitapu, Te Rua Aku Tamariki, ko Amber Craig Taku Ingoa. Kia ora and welcome back to Kahurangi. I'm your new presenter to the amazing Kahurangi team. Very humbled and honoured to be asked to join the crew. My name is Amber Craig. For those that don't know me, I am an uri of Wairarapa and Horowhenua. I descend from a few names, Mōkai Mātiaha, Maika Purako, Tāwhiri Mātia, Ngātuiri, Ihai Taueki, to name a few. I also descend from the Craigs in Scotland, Lanarkshire, and the Needhams in the middle of London in England, apparently. I am very grateful to live nestled between our Tararua Ranges and Waiohini Awa. I'm a mama to three. Two of my babies I've started homeschooling with tupuna-led parenting this year, but they also descend from Whanganui and Kahananu ki Hira Tonga, but we won't hold that against them. But that's enough about my little whānau. Kahurangi brings together our rich Wairarapa history by delving into local kōrero, pūrākau and taonga of Wairarapa while also helping whānau to stay connected and up to date with relevant kaupapa Māori across Aotearoa. So to start with, I'll do a few pānui. We have quite a few today and then we're going to launch straight into our kaupapa e te whānau. So, this weekend at Kohanui Marae is a waka wānana. They start at 6 p.m. Aapopo, so on Friday, and they finish at 11 at Sunday. I might be biased, but I think it's really good that you should go and check it out. Te Rua Mahara, in collaboration with Kohanui Marae, have bought a second waka. And so we're wanting to get whānau out on the moana. We're wanting to talk about the history and the stories around the moana. And about the impacts of colonisation and what you can do about decolonising and re-indigenising ourselves. So yeah, get down to that. On the Sunday, 16th of March, we have Te O Haki o Paora, which is on Sunday the 16th of March. It's from 12 p.m. till 4 p.m. at Te Ropeha Marae, which is the Queen Elizabeth Green Space. Then we also have Canapes for Conservation, so Pukaha putting that on. It's a charity auction, entertainment, drinks and canapes. Hopefully I've said that right. I don't even know how to say that fancy word. And that's on the 29th of March from 4 p.m. till 7:30 p.m. And to grab your tickets, you need to go to the Pukaha website, which I believe is pukaha.org.nz. Last pānui is also Wairarapa having an equity in education symposium, which I believe we have Dr. Hannah O'Regan coming. It's a whanaunga of yours, Chris. They're going to have a whole day where you come along Saturday, 8th of March. We get to have a big, massive wānanga about what we want to do in the education space. What does equity look like there? $50 per person, but you get a hangi lunch. So yeah, sounds really great. We'll put the pānui up on our Facebook as well so that you can see all the emails and where to register. E tēnei rā, we are talking about Māori data sovereignty e te whānau. What is it? Why should we care? What are we hōhā about? Te Manararanga was set up in 2015 to advocate for Māori rights and interests in data, to help protect our data as the world moves into an increasingly open data environment. They explain that data sovereignty typically refers to the understanding that data is subject to the laws of the nation within which it is stored. Indigenous data sovereignty perceives data as subject to the laws of the nation from which it is collected. Māori data sovereignty recognises that Māori data should be subject to Māori governance, policies and processes. So to help me explain this kaupapa a little further, I thought I'd invite a few of my good mates to the studio with me today to kōrero about this kaupapa. Don't worry, they have the qualifications whānau to back it up, I promise. So today with me, I'd love to give the biggest welcome to Chris with a C, Cormac, and Chris with a K, Wahi Peihana, to our whenua in whakaoriori, to Wairarapa. Do you want to introduce yourselves, maybe like a kōwaikwe, no waikwe, maybe not the whole, you know, whakapapa, back to... But yeah, and maybe I'll start with you, Chris with a C. Yep.
Ko wai au, he uri hau o kaitahu, rātou ko kaiti mamoi, ko waitaha hoki, mō moi aki hau, engari I whānau au I kawaka I te taitokirau, tipu mai au I whanganui, ka haere au, kātaki ka haere au ki Papa Ioia, ki te ako ki te Pūtahi Atoi, Massey University, and then e noho nā au ki whanganui a Tara I nāi nei. So I'm Chris Cormack, from Wairaki, one of the best places in the world. I live now in Wellington, but I was born in Kawakawa in the Bay of Islands. My parents were teachers at Bay of Islands College up there, and so we lived there until the freezing works in Moira were closed, and then I moved down to Whanganui, where my mum is from, and then went to Massey University for university. And then moved down to, got a girlfriend in Wellington, moved down to Wellington. I'm slowly getting closer to home. I got stuck at the Cook Strait, but there we go.
Hey, sorry to freak you out. Yeah. I've just noticed that microphone doesn't seem to be working so well.
Okay.
So could you pop over to this one?
I can do that.
Chair and all.
All good.
Yeah.
Just having a rejig all in good. The studio. It's
I'm
a fun
not quite sure why.
All good.
Might be the lead.
All good. So.
Are you breaking technology already?
Yeah, that's
been
what
in
I
here 2 minutes.
Yep.
Oh,
that kaitahu whānau.
Yeah. So yeah, what was I saying? Yeah, I'm moving further south, but I stuck it in Wellington at the moment. But it took Kaiti Momoi 300 years to get across the strait when they moved down from Here Taonga down all the way down to the bottom of Te Wai Paunami. So I don't feel too bad. A little bit about my background around it. Probably pertains to Māori data sovereignty. So I've been doing IT stuff 30 years. You kind of figure out how old I am. And most of that has been in the back end of like building infrastructure, building hardware and building software to store data. My sister, Associate Professor Dr. Donna Cormack, she wrote me into Te Manararaunga in 2017.
She's pretty cool whānau.
Yeah.
Bias.
And that's where my interest in kind of Māori data sovereignty grew. I was always interested in it, but that's when it kind of became a thing I did rather than a thing I was interested in. I have a couple of jobs as well just to position myself. So I work for Catalyst IT in Wellington. I'm on Willis Street there, if you know Wellington at all. And my role there is Kaihua Wairi Matahiko. You can loosely translate that as digital facilitator. I sit in the senior leadership team. And I try and make Catalyst, which is a Pākehā IT company, a better place for Māori to work at and a better place for Māori and Māori organisations and iwi to work with. Just a small job. But then I'm also at Te Kahu I Raranga. I'm also a digital technician there in the digital team.
Which you have the T-shirt ready
which
there
I had the
to
t-shirt ready
show
for.
On
yep.
the...
Yep. But I just want to say that when I'm talking here, these are entirely my own opinions. I'm not speaking on behalf of Te Manararaunga, Catalyst IT, or Te Kahu I Raranga, unless what you think I'm saying is really awesome, in which case I am. But if you don't like it, it's all Chris Cormack. I think that's probably enough from me. I'll pass over to the Chris with a K.
Kia ora e hoa, ngā mihi ki a koe, Amber. Ngā mihi ki Ngāti Kahungu ki Rangitāne hoki. Ko wai au I te taho tōku pāpā, ko tainu I te waka, ko Ngāti Tukurahi te iwi te hapu te marae. I te taho tōku māma ko Scotland, ko Nova Scotia, ngā whenua o Oku Tipona, ko Waipu te kāinga I Aotearoa. Tēnā koutou Māori ora, if you don't like what I'm saying, it's also Chris's. The other
but which
Chris's.
One?
So I work with Chris at Catalyst IT. I'm a relationship manager and kai whakamanawa, so I help him bring more of te ao Māori into the organisation. My background is all in libraries, so information and how people use it and how we manage it and look after it is really important to me, cultural history, all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of the lens that I'll be bringing to this particular kaupapa. It's more about what does it mean for me as an individual, as a person? What is happening with my data? How are we looking after it? How do I keep myself informed, kind of digital literacy, which is knowing how to assess data and make judgments about whether or not I want to participate in that or not. I joke to Ames that I was a perpetual student because it feels like I have been studying at various wānanga for the last several years. So I've done taken some courses through Te Wānanga o Raikawa, Te Wānanga o Aotearoa, and I've just finished a course, Tātai Whetū, through Massey. So we have a kind of, Chris and I kind of have a connection that we both went to the same university, even though it was
many years apart. And I guess that's how I also know both of you. So for those that don't know, prior to me getting my moko kaiwai and coming home and all the likes of that, I used to live in a place called Porirua, and I worked heavily in the IT space, very Pākehā organisation, so helped design and build the Spark network that it's called today, but it used to be called Telecom back in the day. And so Telecom used to work with Catalyst, which is then when I met Chris, and it's really hard. When you're in the Māori tech space, you pretty much know everyone because there's not that many in the room. So when we go to Māori tech sort of meetups, we always used to sit in the back and heckle the people at the front usually sometimes, especially when they were Pākehā getting up and telling us about what we needed to do. So let's kick off this conversation with our first pātai. If you had to explain what Māori data sovereignty is in like an elevator pitch or, you know, quickly to an auntie and my uncle who you know is only going to listen for like two sentences and then tune out, what would that be?
Kick off, Chris.
Sure. So like I'm in the line, we were going to get a coffee at the marae, and I would say Māori data sovereignty is making sure that I know where my data is going, who is collecting it, what they think they're going to be doing with it, and also to try and think about it's not just my data, it might also be my whānau's data, so it's not just a personal thing, it's not only about privacy, it is about a collective.
And I thought about this quite a lot.
Let's get your coffee and let's go here and sit down and chat.
And for me too, to riff off that, it's like Māori data sovereignty is putting Māori control over Māori data, putting Māori data back in Māori hands. So putting, being able to place your tikanga over your data. So whether that's your hapu's tikanga, your whānau's tikanga, your iwi's tikanga, it's allowing you to have the rights and rules and the procedures and the control over your own data.
I think the other thing as well that is really confusing to people is what is Māori data? Mm. And so that has been quite a thing that we've sort of had a lot of wānanga internally to Rangitāne o Wairarapa, also because I wrote them a strategy for their how they deal with data as well. But for me, when we were discussing that, and a lot of what I'd heard from our kaumātua as well was that, well, our ātua, that's Māori data. So anything that, when you're collecting water samples and telling about the health of our waterways, that is Māori data, whether you like it or not. If a Māori didn't take it, it doesn't matter because that's within our atmosphere. It's te ao Māori. And so I think, I don't know if you guys have any whakaaro about that or had lots of conversations like that too around what is Māori data, because sometimes they just go, oh, well, it's just whakapapa data. Mm-hmm. That's all we have to protect.
It's much easier to think of it in terms of what isn't Māori data. That's a much smaller set to define. So pretty much anything in Aotearoa is going to be or contain Māori data. Mm. So if you're collecting data about anything, you're on our whenua, it's Māori data. If you're, or an element of, even if it's something you don't think of as Māori data, like air quality samples, still Māori data. You're still in Aotearoa, it's still Māori data. So it's much easier to go, what isn't? And also, it doesn't matter that much. Just think of it all as Māori data, and then you look after all your data better. So again, you know, what's good for Māori is good for everyone. So if you just kind of think of it in that way, if you do it right for Māori, everyone else benefits anyway.
Yeah. So I just want to pick up on a couple of those points. One is that everything in te ao Māori is contextual and relational.
Yes.
So if you think a little bit like that, it's like everything connects to something else. We don't often look at things in isolation, or if we do, it's for a particular reason, and then it is, once we've figured that out, how does it connect to everything else? And there's something else too that I just forgot about, but it was when you were talking about what it isn't. Whereas, oh yeah, contextual relation will be enough to start with.
I think as well, because I've heard some conversations as well where they talk about how data can be tapu and noa, and so that contextualizing data is really important because you might collect something that might be noa, so you think that there's no tapu-ness around it, but if you match that up with another piece of data and you find new mātauranga within that or new marama, then that can make that data tapu depending on what it is, how it is. And also a lot of the things we've been discussing, especially with our councils in that, is, well, you collected this data in this context. You can't then go and use that data for something else. We have to go back and ask the whānau and the hapū about that context. And one of the other things that I found quite interesting was you had raised about, and you were alluding to it, about the intergenerationalness of data. So although I might have the right within Pākehā law to give away this data, it isn't necessarily just my data to give away. And I love to use the prime example of like DNA. So my DNA contains all the markers of my ancestors that have come before me and will contain all the markers for my mukupuna that come up, you know, after me, hopefully many. no pressure, Waitapu and Tiroa. And so when I sign up for a DNA test, is it my right to give all that information away from my ancestors and from my mukupuna? Do I have that right to make that decision to give that away to an organisation that a lot of them are collecting that data, able to use testing it with that data, able to use that in a pool collectively with others to determine who's Māori or not? You know, very colonial structures,
Yeah, and it's even your siblings and your cousins and your second cousins and your third cousins, and a lot of that, like DNA, like is 90% of it is the same as everyone else. So you're giving away other people's stuff. Yeah, one of the things that Chris and I were talking about in the car on the way over as well, that in a collective society like Te Ao Māori, you don't just have collective rights, you have collective responsibilities. And one of those collective responsibilities is thinking about how your actions as an individual affect the collective. And so sometimes, although the individual benefit might be, I get to find out I'm 17% Scottish or whatever you might be doing with Ancestry.com, does that benefit outweigh the collective harm potentially of now that is in a database that then is sold to the police or sold, like a lot of those 23andMe sold their entire database to law enforcement in the USA. So even though what you think you're doing is this, what the terms and conditions might say can change as well. And it's
the thing about data as well is it can be forever. So once they take it and put it within one context, if they misuse it, that's forever. So there's new, when we were doing a project with Hiria Tirangi at Whare Hauora, and no surprises to anyone, we were throwing some stones at Kāinga Ora because they were going to collect, I think it was data about carbon dioxide, but also temperature, humidity, but it was the carbon dioxide. So through that, they can actually, with that information, if you contextualise it, they can actually work out how many people are in a room at a time. And with the people who are the landlords, there's a whole power structure there. If you are the landlord as Kāinga Ora collecting data about your tenants, and then you can tell, well, actually, we've only signed a contract for two people, but you have a third person living in there because they've been kicked out of their house, they're going to be homeless and they're sleeping on the couch for a bit. Kāinga Ora could then come along and start to, kick all of the whānau out. And so actually, should that happen? And so that's, it seems all right at the beginning because they're talking about it's for the health of the whānau and the whare, but actually you have to think of those what ifs. What happens if something goes wrong? Because contextually that's really important because we as Māori for 180 years know what goes wrong. We predict when things go wrong, and then we're usually there at the end going, we told you so, which really sucks because you don't want to be. But, yeah, do we have any sort of prime examples of other areas where we've in good faith given data and then it's sort of in a New Zealand context?
Yeah, we can. So pretty much every time you interact with the Crown in any way, shape or form, so the IRD, MSD, NZTA, get your driver's license, all that data is collected, and a lot of it ends up in a thing called the Integrated Data Infrastructure at Statistics New Zealand.
My favourite tool.
Then is used by what the statisticians and data scientists call secondary use. So the primary use was to get a license, for example, but then they use it to maybe predict how many people in Masterton might be getting their licences next year. So that's the secondary use of the data. You never consented to that. So the government has this idea of a thing called social licence,
mm-hmm.
that when you interact with the Crown, you're giving them a licence to use data in a way that they think is useful. I don't believe that that's ever actually existed. I don't believe that there is actually a social licence, and I don't believe that that data is being collected under what they call free, prior and informed consent. In order to do data collection ethically, you need to have those four things. You need to ask permission beforehand, not after. It needs to be free, so no coercion.
I might send this podcast to some of the regional councils and the district ones.
Which means that you shouldn't use things like the corrections collects or the police collect, because that data is not freely given.
Yeah.
That is coerced. So free, prior, so beforehand, informed, knowing what it's going to be used for, and then consenting, so agreeing. Most of the data that is used usually against us to tell stories about us is not all of those four. Sometimes consent.
Yeah.
Because you do consent, you sign the little thing that says you can use my data for such and such, but then that's not ongoing consent. And consent is the same in romantic relationships, sexual relationships, and data. It needs to be ongoing and can be withdrawn at any time. And if you don't have that element of people being able to withdraw their consent, then you're still not doing data science ethically.
And there's something in there about the worldview that is being used to assess the data and use it in ways that consent hasn't been given.
Yes.
Or to put a particular lens on something. So we all know about how the talk about deficit, it's always deficit. There are X amount of Māori who are homeless, there are X amount of Māori who have bowel cancer, etc. But that's as far as it went. You kind of have to look at the positives of things, or to do things that would mitigate against some of those harms. But we only got the first bit, which was, they don't have homes.
Yeah.
They are getting bowel cancer at a younger age, but not the next step. It's like, well, what could we do about that?
Yeah, or why?
Or why?
So, Donna, my sister often says that if you look at the health data and the way it's reported, what it tells you is don't be Māori. Because that's all it tells you. It doesn't tell you the system is broken, which is what the problem is, but it individualises problems when the causes are systematic. And so that's a lot of that. And that's, again, what Chris was saying. In a data science or a statistics or a Western lens, people think of data as individual bits or even an individual data set, which is not how it works. You know, Intel Māori, everything has whakapapa, everything is connected, so you can't think of people even as individuals. They're part of a collective, or even as a town separate from the farms around it, all those kind of things. There's a lot of temptation when you do aggregation of data, so like combine lots of data sets to do these general patterns without the context of what surrounds it. So almost all of the solutions that come up with the data, using the data the way it is now, will focus on individual interventions.
Mm.
So they'll be like, there's not enough housing, we need to get these people working more so they can get housing. Not, there's not enough housing because our housing market's broken, we stole half the land, people can't build the houses on their own land.
About housing forever. Like, so, you know.
Data sovereignty, come back.
And yeah.
That's one of the, in the Māori data governance model, which Te Kahi Uriranga wrote, one of the poems around that data quality and the biases and stuff.
So when I sat down with our kaumātua and looked at how we would maybe do our own Māori data sovereignty strategy, we actually started from a more tiatia, and there was a line in it, it was no mai e tama, or as my auntie loves to remind me, it's actually more tiatia, more tūtiri moana, and that's very important to call his name, but there was a line in there that is referred to rua, and in our old scriptures it's karero mai a rua I te pukinga rua I te horohora. And so when we were thinking about Tūhoro Ariki had written this motiatia for his grandnephew, Tūtiri Moana, and it was basically, here's all these lines about everything that we're going to instill in our grandnephew to be the greatest leader.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of line, when we dived into it, rua being rua tau, our sort of, I know there's a bit more nuance, but like our atua of knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. And so that line really talks about how we can collect knowledge and then how do we share it. And yeah. So for me, that whole line was Māori data sovereignty, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how do we collect it in our way? How are we kaitiaki of it? How do we ensure that even if we collect data on behalf of other people, that we're protecting it
yes.
and upholding the mana of those people, our yes. atua, our tupuna, our mokopuna, and then our community as well? And so it was really interesting because then I got into a conversation about, is data any different to, say, a manuscript that's sitting in the archives? Is data any different? And when we started to tease a lot of that out and apply our thinking of, well, how would we treat a manuscript? Mm-hmm. We actually found that data in the digital world is no different to how we would look exactly. at our manuscripts that are sitting in archives. We're not going to allow every man and his dog to come in and look at our manuscripts.
Yeah.
And so we wouldn't necessarily publicly put everything up on websites for people to access because we've already seen the harm of, like, the new tools that are coming out, artificial intelligence mm-hmm. that's taking all of our data and using it out of context and could harm people. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that while we're just going into that big topic.
Well, I think it's good to, and the way I think of data in a way that Te Kahau Reranga do as well, is that when we're talking about Māori data, we're talking about digital or digitizable.
Yep.
So it's essentially everything. Because you can digitize anything if you want. So a manuscript is data, a floppy disk. Well, they don't have those anymore.
Oh, we have SSD, lots in the tunny, by the way.
A spreadsheet, that's data too, but they're both data, and both may contain tapu and noa stuff.
Yeah.
Both may, and that another thing is that classification is really important if you're wanting to design a Māori data sovereignty strategy, understanding the types of data you have and where they may fall. And the tapu noa, like everything in te ao Māori, it's not a binary. We didn't have those things.
Yep.
It's a scale, you know? And
yep.
so, and things can move too.
Yeah.
So the physicians call it quantum superpositions. Anything can be but it's a te ao Māori concept. We knew about that before. Anything can
like
be
everything
in
else. It's a whānau.
It's in multiple states at the same time, depending on who is interacting with it. And data is the same thing. So it may be tapu for me, could be totally noa for you because it's about you. But for me to interact with it, then I need to come through a different lens.
And I think that's the really important thing because at the moment with data and technology in general, we have a lot of young white guys in Silicon Valley designing all of our systems. Yeah. We don't have a lot of people like us in there thinking about how we design and build these systems. And so everything's noa to them because they want to be the next Uber or they want to be the next, you know, the next Facebook.
Yeah.
Or the next Microsoft, those probably old examples now anyway, but show my age.
Yeah, what's TikTok probably?
Chris, did you have any whakaaro? Because I think when I think about you as a person, I think about toy as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have some, if you have whakaaro around that, around data sovereignty and toy.
Good question.
No pressure, just to put you on the spot.
Yeah, wow. You said that you'd give us the questions before we got
sorry.
Here.
Sorry. Yeah. I've just gone with the flow, you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
And maybe I'll start off. So at Kohanui, we have tukutuku panels, and they tell the story of actually when you go around, when are times that we go out to the moana, when are times that we go out to. And so that is a form of data in my mind as well. And so how do we, I guess the other thing is, how do we collect some of these stories and knowledge and how do we preserve them for mokopuna? So that keeps me up at night.
Yeah, and then goes back to your intergenerational transmission of knowledge. Like, how do you pass it down? And speaking as a tauira, as a student who had to do a lot of research online, it's great when everything is online. But then I also worked with someone who like to use ChatGPT, run the questions through, and then it would take me hours to go through what ChatGPT had in our assignment to take out half of it because it was incorrect. Yep. So it was like cross-checking between the sources that I could find and the sources that I couldn't find. I think we haven't had a chance to talk about this, so maybe Chris will have a different opinion, but for some of the toy, I think we're protected because people who are not Māori, who look at it, have no concept and no construct, no framework to understand it in.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes there are things that are written in te reo Māori that if you don't speak te reo Māori, or sometimes even if you do, if you don't have the context for, you're not really going to understand what it is. So it's kind of protected by its own self and the format that it's in. Same with the tukutuku panels, like someone could come along and look at it and go, oh, that's pretty, that's art. And someone else will come along and go, oh, I think that's such and such, and that means that that's there, and then if that happens, that thing will happen.
That's so...
Can I just... Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Because otherwise
no,
I'm
going
to forget.
Yeah, you go.
And so in the course that I've just done about Tatai Whetū, we talked about the maramataka and the integrity of what it was for our tūpuna. And the, we had some lectures from the navigators, and so the integrity, they're not trying to repeat what our ancestors did. They're trying to get a feel for what it was like and to rebuild connections and things. So it's not exactly the same as what they were doing then, but to, they're trying to adhere to the core of what it is rather than the reality, because we can't go back to the reality. We kind of lost some of that knowledge. So it's how do we bring these things forward? So in the case of your tukutuku panels, how do we look at that and then compare it with what's happening now and keep the integrity of the information that's in that panel with the reality of what is happening in Te Taiao now, in the Ngahiri now, like what's in the environment? Because if the tukutuku panel says, if this happens, do this, but if the environment is not telling you that a second thing is happening, there's actually no point to try and do that third thing. Does that make sense? So kind of like how do we keep the integrity of the things that have been left for us that we've not been able to interpret. We're now trying to find our way back to re-indigenise ourselves back to some of that knowledge. So it's kind of protected by itself, coming back to data sovereignty, it's kind of protected by itself in the ways that it has been encoded.
It's actually so important that you bring that up, because actually we are a place of innovation here. So Te Mātorohanga was a tohunga that... with Nepi o Pohuhu and Te Oka Whare, Whatahora Jury sat down and wrote their kōrero, right? At the time, that was sort of sacrilege, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't agree with what they did, but those are some of the most amazing documents describing our atua and our practices and all those types of things. But within it, I believe there was a question directed to Te Mātorohanga to ask if he was afraid. I'm paraphrasing here, it's not word for word, but are you afraid that this knowledge should not be written down, you know? Should it not be here? Should what happens, how will the information protect itself? And Te Mātorohanga, I believe, said something along the lines of the information will protect itself. And more I'm believing that with my journey home, which has been very fast and intense. There's some documents where I've looked at the beginning of my journey, and then you sort of re-look at it at stages of my journey, and it's not until you're in Te Ao Māori and understanding that world that you will, like, there's different, how do I explain?
You understand things at different times because you've got more context.
And there's
more
different layers that you understand. So one sentence, now I can look at it and go, oh, they said it this way because of this. And so when you have that context, you can actually pull a lot more out of that mātauranga. So I just thought that was really on point, because that's what our tūpuna had talked about in late 1860s when they were recording all this stuff. I've just decided not to go off a Waiata because we keep talking so much and it's so good.
Maybe
so.
We'll need it at the end just for a...
Oh, that's a nice one to trust in. Yeah, and I agree with that, but I also would add a caution, because that's what I always do.
Yeah.
So there is the danger, though, that with that, if you still don't restrict access to information in other ways, that people will take it still and interpret it wrongly, and that will become the common interpretation.
Yes.
Yeah,
a classic example, Hutia Te Riti o Te Harakeke. Yeah. that whakatauke has been taken out of context so many times.
Yeah.
And even He Waka Eke Noa. Like, without that becomes what people think it means.
Yeah.
And that's my worry, especially with the rise of machine translations that are actually okay-ish.
Yeah.
Like, they're ethically wrong, but they actually do quite decent translations from te reo to English now. I'm not talking about Te Heku Media who do it right. I'm talking about Google and OpenAI and those ones. That you've got a group of people coming through who will run things through this translation thing and make a TikTok video and it will go viral, and that becomes kind of the accepted interpretation of that tukutuku panel or that thing as well. So I think we still do need to have some other access controls, just like we did back in the day. Not everyone got to go sit at the tohunga's feet and learn. Not everyone got the stone in their mouth. You know, not everyone got those things.
It not was everyone certain gets to karanga.
Exactly. So I think we still need that. And that's another part of Māori data sovereignty, is that none of this stuff is new.
Mm.
We're just remembering how we used to do it.
Yeah.
You know, a data centre, it's just a whare nui.
Mm.
Everything in a whare, or whare whakaero, everything in there tells you about the place you're in and stories of the people that are there, and can predict the future too if you know how to read those things correctly.
Yeah.
So we're not new to storing data. We're not new. We have rules. We have tikanga. We have kawa around, practices around that. Just because it's on a computer doesn't make it that we discard all of those.
Mm.
And I think that's kind of the bones of Māori data sovereignty, is that we've always looked after our information.
Yeah.
We should still be doing it.
I think the thing for me as well, when we were exploring out what is Māori data sovereignty, we actually made the statement that data is just another tohu.
Mm.
So as we add it into our kiti along with our tohu, wairua, tohu taiao, you just add it into the kiti. You don't look at data alone. And you should never do that because it's contextual, right? You have to look at it within whakapapa. That if we're seeing these tohu in the taiao and we're seeing, you know, the wairua is telling us this tohu, and then we've got data that we collectively pull it all together, and then we make decisions based on that, or we derive masauranga and marama from it, that it shouldn't be just this little thing off to the side that we take as gospel, which can sometimes happen and does happen in the science world, where I know I've had massive conversations with Doc about peka peka, and I said to them, oh, someone had asked about what maramataka, the peka peka, come out, and they go, oh, well, we don't know because we don't have that data. I don't think there's any. They don't come out during the full moon. And I was like, well, you can't make that call. Yeah. That's our call to make. Like, we definitely have some mātauranga around when they do come out for short-tailed bats. But, you know, you can't make that just because you have a science view.
Mm.
You should always be deferring to us around those conversations. Yeah. So we've well gone off script, but we're just going to go with it. And here as well, we had so some of our whānau are probably, like, trying to get their heads around what is data and understanding data. But I guess, why is it important for us to understand data and its impacts it has on our mana motuhake?
Mm. So I think you've answered this question already. So data is just another tohu, right? But in order for us to have mana motuhake, in order for us to make good informed decisions, we need access to as many of those tohu as we can, whether they're matiko, whether they're wairua, whether they're taiao, whatever form they come in. The more we get, the better we are able to make decisions. So if we want to exercise our mana motuhake, not reclaim because it's always ours, it's exercising it. If we want to exercise it, we need good quality data to be able to plan. You know, we want to know how many of our people are living in certain areas, how many people are struggling with mainstream schools. They're not struggling. How many mainstream schools are failing our people? Those kind of thing. So that we can, as a iwi, as a hapu, as a hapori, we can design solutions that actually fit the problem. And so for us to do that, we need the data to be able to make those decisions. At the moment, the data about us is mostly not held by us.
Yeah.
And we have to go kind of cap in hand to ask for our own data back. And we don't always get it. You can't always get it. They'll say it's commercially sensitive or some other reason why you can't have it. So, yeah, there's multiple layers that we need to do to get to a data sovereign or Manamutaka Māori solution. But one of those is capability and capacity too. So building our own understanding and being able to... if we got all the data back, what will we then do with it? We need to have those people who know how to store it, how to interpret it and stuff as well. But yeah, without the knowledge, we can't plan.
Yeah.
So it's really important, I think.
Mm. Did you have any whakaro before I jump in?
No.
Because I want to take over. Because one of our dreams, and it's probably because I'm also in my whānau and hapū, so I get to help steer some of those dreams, is we've been talking about just having containers, refrigerated containers worth of data storage, so that we could actually store our whakapapa on our own whenua in a digitised format. And I think as well, just because we use technology doesn't mean it has to be open to the internet.
That's right.
And so that's another misconception that we sometimes have, is just because we collect data, we just put it on the internet. We're seeing more and more now the use of like Google Documents and stuff, having AI or artificial intelligence trawling through that data, whether we like it or not. And that's the same with Microsoft. They have their version of that. And so when we think we're putting it in these spaces that are private, they're not actually. So they're trawling through, they're trying to machine learn off of it so that they can sell us back products all these types of things, or so that they can then train their own translation tools and all those types of things. So there was something, I went to like a KiwiFu, which is like an event with all these tech people back in the day, and someone had basically said, if you're not paying for the tool, you are the product. And so if we're not paying for these tools, they're trying to take as much from us as possible so that they can then try and sell back to us stuff that they think we need. So
you know, for me, there is a balance between, it's that free prior informed consent. If I know that that's likely to happen, but I still want to be able to talk to my friends on a social media platform, then I can make a decision about what I'm going to put on there.
Yeah.
If I don't know what, or have an idea if I'm not aware of what they might be doing with it, then I can't make that decision.
So one of the things I read about recently on Facebook was an uncle who shall remain nameless, who was feeding the whakapapa into a chat GPT, and I was just absolutely horrified because, again, he's collectively making that decision on behalf of all of us, because that's all of our information, and it was about stuff that was in our manuscripts. And so he's then teaching this artificial intelligence what our whakapapa is, and my concern as well is the harm that it's going to create from these types of things. Yeah, it might get it right when we say enter it in, but it's the harm it might derive from that, because you think, well, 60% of the time it might be right, and so we then start relying on it and start believing it.
Yeah.
And then that's when we see the colonization. One of the chats we had before we came into this room over coffee was that all whānau hapū have their own stories, and that's okay. And through that, we have our own different whakaro, different whakapapa sometimes as well. And so we just know that's the case. But when you start to generalise our information, you go, all Māori are this, all whakapapa is this.
Yeah.
That's then when you start to see colonisation of our mātauranga. And so that's also my fear with these types of artificial intelligence. I know we've sort of gone off a little bit.
It's all artificial intelligence is just data under the hood. It takes data to build, and it puts data out the other side. And so if you put flawed and biased data in, you get flawed and biased data out the other side, and that's one of the major problems. The other thing is that Indigenous knowledge is well sought after at the moment. It's the thing that everyone wants. You can see the Googles, the Microsofts, everyone are trying to pay people to give them their knowledge. They know that there's gems in there that they don't have in their own knowledge systems. So we need to be really careful about what we're giving to those multinational corporations, because they have no... this is not the people who work there. There's some lovely people who work there. But the corporation is beholden to the US shareholders. That's the only thing it works to do, maximise profit for the US shareholders. In the current political climate, not particularly nice US shareholders either.
Yeah.
So we just need to, and that's what Chris was saying as well, it needs to be that informed consent. So like if I'm like, okay, I don't care that my bad poem that I wrote might be used to train Google's thing, I'll pop that into Google Docs. That's my choice, but I'm at least informed.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of them intentionally make it really hard to know. Like, have you ever tried to read the terms and conditions of Facebook?
Yes.
It's pages and pages.
Yeah, painful.
Yeah.
It's on purpose.
Yeah.
You know? If they just said, we're feeding your data to an AI, people might be like, what? Hang on. So, yeah, it's a tricky one.
So we've just talked about how doom and gloom it is out there. Are there any sort of tips that you have for whānau who, you know, they might not be that tech savvy and can't build their own platforms, but is there some kind of tips and tricks that you might want to suggest that they start looking at or doing? Or
I think just have a think around, just kind of have a think about the kind of data that you share. Just have a think and think, would you be okay if someone put that up as a poster in New World or something? You know, like, just think of when you're putting it there, you're basically putting stuff in public. So just have a think about, would you feel okay if the photo of your muckle was used to sell baby formula in China or whatever, which is potentially what happens to some of those images. Mm-hmm. Just have a think about, and then you can kind of make some consent around what you choose to share or not. There's work being done in the space. Te Kau Rerang is working on a decentralized, kind of a mana mō te haki data solution that should be tikanga at place, like you were talking about, not for refrigerated containers, but similar kind of idea that data lives where it is. But at the moment, look for people who store data in Aotearoa under New Zealand law. So New Zealand-owned companies, that will mean that at least you have some recourse through our privacy laws, through Te Tiriti o Waitangi. As we all know, it's hard enough to get our government to honour it.
Mm.
It's impossible to get the Australian or the US or anyone else. So just be aware of those. And the other thing, thing in there, data residency, where it is, isn't necessarily the same as sovereignty.
Mm.
So, for example, say I own the land, but there's a whare taonga on top of the land, I don't own that.
Mm.
I can't open the door whenever I want. I can't walk in there and take my stuff out. That's the same as an overseas company building a data centre here.
Yep.
Might be on our whenua. We can't open the doors and we can't take things in the outside.
So yeah, so I was going to talk about that a little bit, because there is this misconception, especially in like the business world, that Microsoft coming to New Zealand is great because we'll be able to have this data centre. And I'll just call it out because I don't think Microsoft is watching this. But, but when Barack Obama was president, I believe it was, they actually passed a law that said no matter where the data is actually stored, if it's a US company, it's beholden to US law.
Mm-hmm.
So a US company like the likes of Microsoft, Google, that hosts their data on our whenua will not be subject to our laws. They'll be subject to the US laws that company comes from.
Yeah.
And so that's then when we have to make a decision about where we choose to put our data. Do we put it into these big corporations or do we put it into, and I know I've done a bit of mahi with Catalyst Cloud, which I know bears the same name as Catalyst, but is actually a separate company.
Yeah.
So they hold data centres around Aotearoa and they're really wanting to work out how they can be a good Te Tiriti partner as well. And on top of that, a lot of their data centres are geothermal powered as well.
Mm.
If not all, I'm not sure.
I think they're certified net zero, so carbon net zero. So, their power should be all renewable.
Yeah, because there's a whole conversation here which we haven't even touched on. Yeah. It's probably its own one, and which is about the whakapapa of technology and the impacts that it has on the Te Ao, which is a whole nother, like, artificial intelligence and ChatGPT. When you put a request in there, that it actually runs the whole power of New Zealand to run one of those queries. Yeah. Like, should we be doing that? Yeah. Is that something we should be contributing to? That's a whole nother one on the itafano. Is there kind of any last thoughts, or do you want to ask your own questions, or We've totally gone off script here, so I'm just going with the flow.
I'm just trying to think. Like, yeah, just back to that, what should whānau do? I think that work on, if you can, kind of work on a personal data strategy plan and then make that into a whānau data strategy plan, then make that into a marae data strategy plan, then make that into a hapū data strategy plan, and then you've got your Māori data sovereignty plan kind of thing. So if you start individual, just, and most of it is around that, should I do this?
Yeah.
And then if you decide yes, that's fine. You can decide to use Microsoft if you want, as long as you've made a conscious choice.
Yeah.
It's not just something you do because you didn't think there was anything else, any other options.
Mm. Yeah. For me, for my personal data plan, is that I run it through tikanga. So yeah. You alluded to it before, Amslap. I go back and I think, is it tapu and noa? What's the whakapapa of the data? What's the whangaungatanga? How does it connect to other pieces of data or other people's data? Kaitiaki, where is it being stored? Who's looking after it? What do I think the impact is on the environment? Manaaki, is this actually going to help me or help someone else, or is this going to be not that useful at all? I always want to whakamana someone, so does that do that? And then wairua and mauri is also really important for me. If I'm using this thing, how does that make me feel? So I'm playing this game at the moment, and it makes me feel really bad, but I still keep playing it, so I have to work through that. But it's should I even be using it if it's actually making me feel really miserable?
Yeah.
And then I've decided that I need to do it again in a couple of years' time because my context will have changed and the relationships that I have with people will have changed. The relationships that I have online will have changed. So do I need to take another look at it? So I've shifted, as an example, I've shifted social media sites. I'm on Cloud Island, which is a New Zealand run kind of Fediverse social media short messaging site.
That's a very long explanation of it, but great one, but yeah.
Yeah, thanks. So I was I don't know if people know this thing.
It's like Twitter used to be.
I was trying not to say the T word.
Well, I'm not saying the other word. Like Twitter used to be.
So I got off that platform and I'm on this one, and there's quite a few local people on it who I talk to, and there's some people who are overseas who I talk to, and then there's some people who just seem to be on there all the time. If I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, they're on there. If I'm on there at lunchtime, they're on there.
Yeah.
But probably that's the same for them looking at me going, why are you always on here? It's just So I'm making decisions for myself and trying to think about, this is not only about me, it's about other people as well.
Yeah.
And I also want to say, we've talked a lot about big overseas companies because they're the most ubiquitous and the most in our face and the ones that we will interact with the most because either the organisations or the institutions that we work with are using them and we actually have no choice or not. But there's also New Zealand ones that we should be thinking of. When you sign up for a competition, what are they asking you for? Yeah. Why do they need, unless it's winning something that means that it's R18, why do they need your date of birth?
Yeah.
Why do they need your gender?
Yeah.
So sometimes I'm happy to give that information to someone. I'm like, oh yeah, that's important for you to know. And other times I'm like, no, I'll just skip that question.
But just consciously asking that question, right, is really important to start with. Because one of the things I've consciously done is not show my children's face on public social media. So where I feel like on Facebook I've closed it down to just friends, I might share a post with their face on. But just for me, the environment of which we're seeing our social media turn, having their faces up there is just not something we want to do at the moment. Yeah. And my partner's just like, I fully trust you because you're in the digital space and security, which is kind of a little scary. Because once it's up there, you can't get it back. And so that's the bad thing, I guess, with technology and where it's going to. Yeah.
This is all very doom and gloom. Technology is amazing and it can, social medias can connect. It's a tool and you need to know how to use it and you need to be able to make a judgment about which one is the right one for you.
I think it's a bit like whakapapa, eh? You can learn a little bit of whakapapa and then you go off and you're like, can harm people if you give them the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a bit like technology. You can't just go off and do it. You need to know a little bit more before you start harming people and just allowing everyone, and because these big giants, their tools are just easy to use, so it's very hard to unpick yourself from their systems because they're on your phone, they're then connected to your laptop and you can connect everything and it makes your life easy. So
you can send and share things with other people really easily.
Yes, yep. Just with the share button. do you have any last thoughts before we wrap this up? Short last thoughts?
No, I don't. I just think it's a timely topic at the moment too, even more timely with the changes in the world and the way that data can be weaponized against people, that it's good for us to be thinking about how we can, as Te Reo Māori, and again, reiterate, if we do it right for Māori, we do it right for everyone else here as well. So if we get it right for us, we protect the rest of New Zealand too. So it's a real timely thing to be thinking about.
And it's not exclusive. No. It's not only for Māori to think about data sovereignty. It's for everybody to think about their own data sovereignty, their own safety, their own place in their community and in society.
Yeah.
And to be honest, if we're including Mātauranga within the data sets and are able to start analysing, we get better knowledge bases out of it because then we can combine science and Mātauranga. Yeah. Our Mātauranga has been here for thousands of years, if not longer. Just a bit of science, really, to be honest. It's just straight facts. All right, I would love to thank both of you. Thank you, Kōrua, for coming over the hill from Te Whanganui Ōtara to come and join us today. By us, I mean me. But the rest of the Kahurangi team really appreciate it as well. And I'm sure my whānau got heaps out of it. Cool. So thank you very much. I'm just going to close up with a karakia now. Unuhia, unuhia, unuhia ki te uru tapa nui, kia wātia, kia māma, te nākau, te tinana, te wairua e te aratakatū. Koia rā i rungo whakaeria ake ki runga, kia tīna.
Tīna.
Haumie, huie, taekie.